out of
here.
Can I save me a spot? Hey everybody, welcome to the Design Lab. What did Robbie say? What did Robbie tell you?
That everything's going to be brilliant.
That's what I'm going to show you. I'm going to show you how brilliant everything is going to be, I hope. Lots and lots of material to cover. Interrupt as we're going along. But what I want to do is I want to continue on sort of Robbie's setup and talk a little bit more about the product, talk about the design, talk about the naming, talk a little bit about the branding, and then we'll get you on to actually start seeing and touching and feeling and see what the thing can actually do. But mostly I want to give you the backstory on the design and really what I think about as being different this generation versus last. Lots of things that are different. But I want to touch on some highlights of the product design. So the first thing, who went to GDC? We were GDC. That was it. GDC speech, I'll give you a quick summary of that. At the essence of Xenon is this notion of the HD era. Maybe you saw some coverage or read a transcript. If you didn't, shame on you, you should have read a transcript before you came across. The HD era, from my point of view, a lot of people will think about the HD era and think about the product visuals, the graphic fidelity, 16:9 widescreen, or what have you. But I think about it as being much more fundamental, a shift, and dramatic a shift. You think about the shift from 2D to 3D. First thing everybody thinks about is side-scrollers to polygonal characters. So maybe they think about Super Mario Brothers in 2D, they think about Tomb Raider in 3D, and they say, well, yeah, that's the difference in the screenshot you'd run in your publication to show the difference. But frankly, that wasn't the biggest shift that really changed the industry. If you think about the collection of shifts, they cumulatively shifted our industry in a really big way. So I think about input. 2D era was all digital. 3D era introduced analog in a big way. Think about the biggest games of this generation and trying to play those games. Play Halo 2 on a SNES controller or play Gran Turismo on a Genesis controller. It's not going to be a very satisfying experience. So controls grew up in a way. We went from cartridge to CD. A lot of people say, well, yeah, but that wasn't that big a deal. I'll tell you, talk to any of the publishers, it was a huge deal. Because here they were spending, you know, $20 to manufacture a game cartridge that had to sit on inventory. They had to wait 6 weeks to get them manufactured. It was a real problem. So they had an inventory management problem that they never got it right. So they either made too many, and they had a whole bunch of inventory on their hands that they had to dump and eat at the end of the day, which meant they couldn't reinvest in games. Or they had too few, and gamers like us were disappointed because a game like Turok on N64, I remember, stocked out. They didn't make enough of them, and it was an 8-week delay from the time that I went to the store and was disappointed that it wasn't there to when they had some more copies. That doesn't happen in the CD era. Changed dramatically how the business actually functioned, but also changed the creative canvas. Think about music in 2D, right? Think about, you know, it sounds like today's ringtones are almost as good as video game music was in the 2D era. But remember the Wipeout? First time you played Wipeout? Or, I don't know, maybe it was Ridge Racer. And, wow, a real soundtrack, real music, how much that added to your whole experience? It was awesome. I love the Wipeout soundtrack. And I think back to this day, just there was a before and after moment. There was sort of before Wipeout, and then there was after Wipeout in terms of video game music. And now video game music is being sold as soundtracks at retail. It's really come a long way. Another thing from a creative medium point of view, we went from in-engine cutscenes, if you want to call them that. You think about, you know, the little interstitials between levels of Pac-Man or Donkey Kong or what have you, to real FMVs. And to move the story or the narrative along, you think about, you know, Final Fantasy and what Final Fantasy looked like on PlayStation with FMVs and the fact that the medium afforded the creators that opportunity. So when I think about 2D to 3D, it's easy to think Super Mario Brothers to Tomb Raider, but it's actually all of those things. When I think 3D to HD, I think the same we're going through the same kinds of transformations. So you think about the visual fidelity. Sure, we're going to have monster pixel shaders. Shader 3.0 is going to be awesome. The resolution is going to be awesome. The different graphical techniques are going to be awesome. We're going to go to widescreen, remaster everything for widescreen 16 by 9, but then we're going to figure out how to make it look good on 4 by 3 as well. But the design point is going to shift. So you can think about the visuals. An easy thing to do is to say 3D era, 4 by 3, HD era, you know, better graphics on a 16 by 9 palette. It's not just about that, though. I look at it and I go through sort of the same list and I think, input. Well, gee, we went from digital to analog, and now we're going to augment that with voice and video. We've seen some hints of that. I mean, none of these eras are like distinct before and after moments. We sneak up on them. So we've seen some hints on that in terms of what's happened on Xbox Live and what's happened with iToy, for example, and some of the early technology there with cameras. But that's going to really change the way gaming is done. I was talking to a famous game designer at GDC. I won't name his name for obvious reasons, but he said, look, I don't buy this voice thing. You're full of crap. And I said, what do you mean? He said, well, we've been screwing around with voice for like 10 years. I said, yeah, so? He said, well, I don't believe in command and control. Well, command and control works perfectly. He's like, does not. Name the game. I'm like, Halo 2. Might have heard of it. He's like, wait a minute. How do you set up command and control in Halo 2? Like, you don't set up anything. You just go play. He's like, what are you talking about? You can't say run and jump and reload and stuff like that. I'm like, no. Climb up to the top of the map. You grab a sniper scope. You zoom in on what the other team is doing. And you shout down to your guys, you know, take the Warthog around the south side. Look for the sniper on Tower B. He's like, that's not command and control. I'm like, okay, so let me get this straight. If I said reload and didn't have to push a button, that would be command and control. If instead I manipulate 5 human beings to do the right thing and we win the tournament, that's not command and control? He's like, that's not fair. That's just like, that's just natural. That's not really input. And I'm like, yeah, it's natural. That's what you want input to be like. You know, when you're playing Wipeout, we all play Wipeout like this. Wouldn't it be nice if, like that, all the calories that I was burning actually contributed somehow to the game, or the shouting that I'm doing at the screen while I'm playing, you know, Madden or FIFA contributed somehow to the game? Yeah, it'd be nice. Let's go grab it. You're not going to grab that through a button or a stick. You're going to grab that a different way. So voice and video, really going to change the medium. We talked about cartridge to CD. CD to DVD, more stuff, whatever. But online distribution? It's going to be huge. It's not going to replace retail. Take a look at what's a great example here? You know, you take music. What's happening with music? Or you take the internet. You guys are all journalists. Take the internet. Okay, every print publication in the world now has an online component. Some publications are online exclusive. That's okay. What's going to happen in the game space in the HD era? We're going to have both. Virtually every retail game is going to have a post-retail experience, just like every retail publication has a live, if you will, experience in today's day and age. And there are going to be some that are online exclusive or start out to be online exclusive. I mean, there are some magazines, whatever you want to call them. There are some websites that have turned into books or magazines or DVDs or whatever, you know. Big fan of Strong Bad, just a little flash animated cartoon. You can buy Strong Bad the DVD. You can buy Strong Bad the CD. It started as an internet thing. How cool is that? We're going to see games this next generation, the HDR, that start as an Xbox thing and then mature into something that you can buy at retail in some way, shape, or form, perhaps. You're going to see, you know, these games really shift to having an extended life beyond retail. You know, you look at what is happening with music now. You know, you take the Jay-Z and Linkin Park collaboration, I don't know, just to pick out something that that skittered across my mind. And all the remixes and all the mashups that people are doing now, they're taking the same material and they're re-releasing it. Some are being exclusive on iTunes or MSN Music or Rhapsody or whatever. Some of them are being packaged with other pieces of content. Some are being re-released. Some of them come out as albums. The Jay-Z Linkin Park thing came out as an album. Some are just being used as promotional material. It's crazy. You know, it's really great that online has given a new vehicle and a new way for people to think about their mediums. And our medium is the one that's most pliable. It's most malleable in this space. So I think online is going to make a really, really remarkable difference in this generation. I also think that the consumer has shifted. And, you know, in the 3D era, you could say that the consumer, quote, grew up a little bit and got a little bit more serious about the game and that the medium grew up a little bit and became a little bit more about the narrative. Sure, but in the HD era, I think the biggest shift, it's not about the technology, it's not about some of these trends. The biggest shift is going to be the change in consumers. At GDC, I talked about the consumer as shifting from, you know, you think of last generation being Generation X, and now people are calling this one Generation Y. Why, I'm not really sure, but I don't think of it as Generation Y, I think of it as Generation Remix. I think of this this era of consumers wanting, in a world where they can buy the same Starbucks, the same Gap jeans, and the same Honda Civic anywhere in the world, and they get bombarded with all the same global brand messaging and the same Nike tennis shoes and everything else, they all want to customize their experience in life. Customization and remixing the experience is becoming imperative. And it's an imperative, obviously, in the entertainment industry, but now it's becoming an imperative to the consumer, where consumers want to modify their cars. They want to modify their bodies. They want to modify their fashion. They want to be able to stand apart in a world where globalization has offered a lot of choice, but has marginalized their differentiation in the real world. So you take that and you apply that to what we're doing with Xenon, and I think that is the number one force. Sure, there's all this technology. Sure, it's great that the internet's around. But the real force is going to be the change in consumers. That's our Xenon development kit. Sorry about that. We'll talk about some of the challenges with the Xenon hardware in just a little bit. Hold that thought. Shh. I'm Steve Jobs' biggest customer. It's very ironic. We're thinking different in Xbox land this generation. So, anyhow, consumer is really going to be the new focal point. If I think about the 2D era, technology was at the center. If I think about the 3D era, content was at the center. If I think about the HD era, I think about the gamer at the center. And it's a big shift. It's a huge mind shift. Robbie will talk about, and I don't know if he used this line on you guys because might be a little too lofty. Some people don't necessarily get it or react well to it. But he says, we want to change fun. And, okay, well, what does that mean? Well, we want to change the way people have fun. Well, what does that mean? We want to use technology to change the way people have fun. Okay, but what does it mean to change the way people have fun and what's in it for us? Well, we'll grow the audience. Okay, well, how do we grow the audience? And so myself and the team, we all take this challenge really seriously. I mean, you think about it, you're like, how do you change fun? Well, if you come in every day and you start thinking about how to change fun every single day and you build an army of people that think about changing fun, sure enough, you'll eventually change fun. You can change fun. Fun is malleable. It's just a word, right? It's just a concept. It's just a state of mind. Let's go change it. How do we mix it up? So we took this challenge head on, and we said, okay, how are we going to go out and change fun? And we thought about the gamer at the center of the universe. And then we said, well, changing fun means bringing more people into it. And it means giving new experiences to the gamers that we already got. Call them the hardcore, passionate video gamers or whatever. And then there's the rest of the world. How do we get the rest of the world? And so when I think about the rest of the world, you have to have a breakthrough in your thinking like the Myst guys had. So I think about Myst, and a lot of people in the industry when Myst came out said, that's not a video game. You know, that's a HyperCard thing, blah, blah, blah. People were very disingenuous and disparaging around Myst. And I was like, what are you talking about? Myst is awesome. Think about all the people that don't play video games are now having a great experience. And pretty uniformly, people had great experiences with Myst. People were saying, well, that's not a video game. But it changed the way people thought about video games. It's the way changed the way people thought about having fun. My wife doesn't play video games. She's not into it. She's not into the Twitch gaming thing. It's a big part of what I've always enjoyed. But we played Myst together. And sometimes she'd drive the mouse, and I would take the notes, because you had to take notes. It was kind of crappy. On one hand, that you couldn't type notes into the computer. But on the other hand, it forced you to actually write stuff down, and it gave a second person a role. And so it was a multiplayer game without being a multiplayer game. You know? And so it actually worked really to its favor. And, you know, the back of the book had, like, this extra paper so you could write your notes down. So we took notes and we took turns back and forth, and it was a great experience. And there was this moment in time where I was clicking the mouse. I happened to be driving and she was note-taking. She's like, wait! And I'm like, wait, what? And she's like, don't go into the elevator yet. I'm like, why not? Is it trapped? Is there a booby trap? Like, why are you worried about this? She's like, is it going to hold both of us? And so we can all laugh, and I kind of set up this story in a way that would make you laugh. But I thought about that for a couple of seconds. Like, they had us. They had us right there. You know, they had us. We were in that experience. And no video game up until that point had ever done that to me. That's when it just clicked. And so, like, the ungame was the game that was the most game. You know, it had the least sophisticated control structure, blah, 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 linear puzzles, blah, blah. I mean, there are all sorts of criticisms you could lay against it. It was the first time that my wife and I sat down, had a shared experience that we really enjoyed on the whole thing, and we got so trapped up in the game world that we hesitated to get into an elevator because we weren't sure if we could both get into it. Wow, we were in that world. That was so cool. I mean, what a breakthrough moment that was. We want to create more breakthrough moments with Xenon, and we want to redefine that fun. So let's take my favorite example, because it's a game I was playing maniacally when we started Xbox, is Tony Hawk. So people will say, well, what can you do with Tony Hawk? Like, how do you broaden the audience with a game like Tony Hawk? And I think Tony Hawk is the greatest game to broaden. You know, it's this crazy Twitch game. Blah, 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 blah. How are you going to get grandma to play it? How are you going to get your sister to play it? How are you going to get your dad interested? Well, you're not. Not as it's defined today, you're going to redefine fun. You're going to redefine participation. So my sister, graphic designer, uses a Macintosh, doesn't mind sitting on the couch when I'm playing video games. She's surfing the web. She's an illustrator. She's doing something, whatever. And she looks at my Tony Hawk character and says, that's not what you look like. That's like, you'd never wear that in public. Why are you wearing that? Well, it's the best that they gave me. I'll make you a cool T-shirt. Da-da-da-da-da. Makes up a cool T-shirt. Boom. Now I'm sporting that shirt online. That's kind of cool. Now all my buddies see me online. Where'd you get the shirt? How'd you unlock that shirt? What was the cheat code for that shirt? Oh, it wasn't. Christine made it. She made me one? Sure. So now our gang all is wearing the same shirts, and now we start getting a reputation online, and people are like, those shirts are really tight. How'd you get those? Friend made them. Can you get me one? Well, for a buck. So now Christine opens up shop on Xbox Live, right? And she's selling these shirts, and she's getting her message out there, and it's a new artistic medium for her to express herself. You know, never picked up an Xbox controller. Never had to touch one. Now, for the hardcore, all of us are manic Twitch gamers and know all the combos and can get millions and millions of points and want to achieve everything there is in Tony Hawk. The game just got better for us because now we can express ourselves differently. Didn't take away at all that she was in this environment. It added. It added for us, and it added a new member. Is she playing? I don't know, but she's having fun, right? Now, Dad comes in. Dad works for Pepsi, just making it up. Comes in, and he watches some of this dynamic, you know, because like most parents, will surf over the shoulders of their kids and watch what's going on. And he's like, wow, you play this thing a lot. You're, like, doing real tournaments online and stuff? Yeah, you know, and, like, show him the tournament ladder thing, bring it up. And he's like, well, what do you win? Well, you win bragging rights. You can tell everybody that you won, you know, the tournament. And he's like, well, that kind of sucks. Like, in the real world, you get to win stuff. Wouldn't you rather win stuff? Well, yeah, but nobody does that. Well, no. I manage promotions of Pepsi. You're going to go win stuff. How much would you have to win for it to be interesting? Well, if a Mini Cooper was the prize, that would be cool. Okay, we'll arrange it. So now Pepsi is hosting tournaments online. As a result of this, Dad hasn't picked up a game controller, but now these tournaments are being held online. You've got T-shirt designers, you've got skate park designers, you've got Pepsi coming on board with live performances from live artists that are being interlaced into the whole experience. Again, for the hardcore gamer, a lot more has been added to the whole environment. Maybe Activision is getting a cut of the sponsorship or whatever, whatever. You can imagine the business model. But it shifted, right? Now the game is elevated to a new level. Well, now that it's to a new level, now there's some drama, right? Now we care a little bit more about the game. If there's drama, you can go market drama, right? That's what reality TV is. It's what television in general is. It's marketing drama. So now you take Paul Fox. He's not much of a gamer. I can attest to that. But Paul's a great talker. So he's going to do commentary, and he's actually going to televise the whole tournament, and he's going to take in the human drama. And guess what? We all have video cameras built in to our consoles, and so now you can see the drama unfolding. You can see how I'm reacting to how a competitor does. You can see how I'm reacting in the heat of competition. I can be interviewed by Paul as part of the whole thing, and Paul's got a staff who's editing and slicing and actually presenting these replays, these quote replays. They're not replays anymore. Now it's a broadcast. Okay, now a bunch of people are interested in watching. Now the sponsors are happy and the sponsors are willing to pay more. Now, me as a player, it's not just this input, it's what I'm wearing. It's how I deal, you know, deal with competition. It's how I deal with an interview. It's, you know, it's the way I carry myself, how I deal with stress in the environments and everything else. I mean, I use Formula One a lot as an example as well. Formula One isn't interesting. I mean, just in the abstract, thinking about 16, I think there's 16 events a year, 16 events a year where there's like 12 passes per race of material interest that last 2.5 hours each does not make for something that millions and millions and millions of people should follow. It's completely irrational until you introduce the drama. And I subscribe to Formula One magazine, and I watch the qualifying, and I watch the pre-race show, and I know all about all the drivers, and I know about the sponsorship changes, because they've shared all that with me, and they've created a backstory that makes those 12 passes really dramatic. And then they cut it up in an interesting way when they give it to me. It's a great opportunity for sponsors. I mean, Formula One sponsorship is probably the most expensive sponsorship money can buy on the planet. And it's crazy when you think about 16 two-hour races. There's 32 hours of racing. I put way more than 32 hours a year into Formula One. I probably spend 32 hours a month on Formula One during the season. And there's only 32 hours of actual activity that matters, because they've done such a good job packaging it, and because there is really drama and they bring that human element forward. So now Paul is doing this with the help of his little sidekick here, who's slicing it up and giving me good camera angles and putting together a good show, and people are watching it. Now my mom, she's a PC user. She's not going to be a console user. She's not going to learn Tony Hawk. She loves The Sims, though. She's decorated her character. She's decorated her house. She's made some friends online. She likes, you know, Solitaire and, you know, Bejeweled and games like that. Well, let's give her an experience like that. Let's put her on the sidelines and let her watch the experience, but also cheer on the experience. Let's let her interact with me. So the judges like 540s, and they give you, you know, big points for 540 kickflips. So she whispers that to me, and she says, boy, the six guys that went out ahead of you, 540 kickflips were off the charts. You should practice those while you're waiting. Cool, thanks, Mom. Then I go out there and I skate. I see my mom in the crowd. She's dressed up like her little Sims character. There's some little puzzle game or some interaction she has where she can applaud based on what she thinks, you know, people are doing. And now the audience applause is 5% of your score, or whatever. I'm kind of making it up, right? But now Mom has a way to interact with a family member that lives 3,000 miles away in a way where it's now interactive, and she's actually having an impact on something other than just the make-believe house and her make-believe character. She's actually affecting the score and the outcome. So she's cheering really, really hard for me. She's sharing ideas in terms of what's going to work and what's not going to work. Now Mom's in on it. So now I've got sister, dad, and mom all in the Xbox universe. And as the hardcore gamer, just totally changed the game. Like, what I have to do to be successful, to be number one at Tony Hawk, has a completely different meaning than figuring out how to game the game and put together the 10 million point combo. It's not about that anymore, right? It's about so much more. It's about how I carry myself, how I stylize myself, the posse that I put together, the team that I put together, how we do interviews, how we perform, who we invite out to watch the broadcast, and how we carry on in the broadcast, right? There's total new dramatic elements. That's an HD era game. That is redefining fun. That is growing the audience. That's what we're really after with this crazy Xenon thing. So it might sound crazy or may sound trite to say we want to go redefine fun or we want to redefine gaming. And you might think, you know, this HD thing versus this 3D thing, it's about the screen. It's not. It's about so much more. It's about moving the gamer to the center point. And that leads me into, it's a long-winded way. I get a little excited about this. It's a long-winded way to lead into what we decided to name it, why we decided to name it. So we threw out Xbox 2 to scratch it off the list. Not going to call it Xbox 2 because it's a new generation. It's a new era. Breakthrough. So Sony made two PlayStations in the same era, in that 3D era. So it's great. Name it PlayStation 2. If we were still in the 3D era, if this was just a 3D console, we would just name it Xbox 2. But it's not. We're jumping to the next one. So it's time to reset it. So we threw out a whole bunch of names. We had a favorite, though. Our favorite was Xbox 360. The favorite for two reasons. First reason was we want to put the gamer at the center. Kept talking about the center. Put the gamer at the center of the universe. That's the number one reason. Number two reason is because the very first principle that I ever established on the Xenon program was to create a seamless experience. Save that thought. Circles have no seams. So those are the two reasons we loved it. So we throw it out there, and we throw it out to a bunch of gamers. We travel around the world, and we're kind of an inspiration and intuition and innovation-fueled team that likes to go out and validate our intuition with gamers. As opposed to, like, going out and doing all this consumer research and being data-driven, we want to validate our intuition. That's the right way. Consumers don't know what they want. They can't anticipate a product. You know, you go out and talk to them in 2003 about a product coming out in 2005 that they'll buy in 2007 and keep for 5 years. They're only helpful directionally. So you have to lead them along a little bit. So we go out and we have all these crazy names. And we threw out 360, and we're all secretly hoping that 360 is going to work, and that they're going to say things like, well, 360 puts me at the center of the universe, or 360 is seamless, you know? Like, sitting behind the glass waiting for the kids to say this and the adults to say this, we had surveyed non-gamers. Funny thing happens. 360, what does it mean to you? First time I ever kissed a girl was on a Ferris wheel, you know? First time I got into a club, and I just love vinyl. And seeing the DJ and the turntables, that's what it reminds me of. Where you remember those little merry-go-rounds in the park when you were growing up? I remember when, you know, and it was all these memories. The first time I landed a kickflip. The first time I saw a plane do a loop at an air show. Like, it was the tone of their responses. It was totally emotional. All the other ones were like, well, it makes me think of this product or this product or this product. You threw out 360 and they're like, it doesn't make me think of a product. It makes me think of something that's happened to me. It makes me think about an experience. It's personal to me. It evokes this emotion, and it evokes joy. The emotion was almost uniformly joy. Very few people said, well, the first time I tried to land a kickflip and I broke my ankle and I have two pins in my leg. That was rarely the type of response that we got. It was more, you know, a meaningful thing. Or, you know, when my wife and I exchanged wedding vows and we exchanged our wedding rings or whatever. It was uniformly, I mean, there was no negative imagery. So I'm sitting back there, and I'm like, wow, this is more powerful than I thought. I guess I'm not that clever. And the marketing guys are doing circles. They're doing cartwheels, more circles, more circle imagery. Right? They're going crazy thinking, this can be great for advertising. Think about all these great, like they're feeding all these great ad ideas, you know, the Ferris wheels and the disco balls and stuff. So that's what we ended up on with this whole Xbox 360 thing. And we had some other great name contenders. Some people feel a little bit uncomfortable because it's not a typical name. There are very, very few products that have ever named themselves like this. Possible exception being cars, or the notable exception being cars. And then it's like a model number. This evoked a different emotion for people. So now, before I show it to you, I want to talk a little bit about one more thing, which is this whole seamless experience. Xbox One, 19 months, ready, fire, aim. We just had to go and do it. We had 20 people on the team the day we approved the project. We had to go hire some people. We had to go figure it out. We had to go do it. Everybody just sort of ran all in parallel, not in a very coordinated fashion. And, you know, the seams show. I think that if you watch an ad on television, then you go experience the kiosk, and then you buy the package off the shelf or visit the website, and then you open it up and you look at it. And then you go to the dashboard, or, like, you turn it on and you get that startup. What does that startup animation have to do with anything? I don't know. But we got it done. I mean, it was better than black. It's better than nothing. But really, it was complete non sequitur. Then you go to live, and we have the live dashboard update, and you're like, wow, there's a seam there, too. Seams really show through on Xbox. And now that I've highlighted them for you, I'm sure you'll all write very negative stories around Xbox One, what a dismal failure it was. But the reality is most products are exactly like that. The seams show everywhere in our world, and every one of us, there's probably not one example that I use that one of you haven't talked about or socialized with somebody. Probably a few of you have thought about every one of them. I could tell you about every seam in the system. And the thing about seams, the thing that I just try to drive home with the team is that our opportunity here is to create a magical system, a magical product. There are no perfect products. It doesn't exist. It's a fantasy. It's, you know, like the Holy Grail. There's no such thing. But there are magical products, and there's a very few, very, very small number of them. You've probably experienced a handful of them in your lifetime. And there's a couple of things about magical products. The first thing is, or maybe the most important thing, is that they all feel like they've been created by one person, which is remarkable. So you pick, I'll pick a couple that I think are magical, that are germane in this era right now. I'll pick Mini Cooper, and I'll pick the iPod. You look at those two, and you go from the advertising to the physical design to the experience to the retail experience to the advertising to the messaging. You know, you look at the irreverence in a Mini Cooper ad, and then you buy a Mini Cooper. Anybody done a Mini Cooper purchase experience here? It's phenomenal. My sister bought a Mini Cooper, and I just went along for the ride. I went along with her, and it was remarkable. The whole purchase experience feels like a natural extension of the advertising. You go and you get in the car, and the button to put up the sunroof says big yellow warning, like the airbag warnings that are in cars or whatever, big yellow warning, and it says, warning, before you do this, make absolutely positively sure that you're incapable of dealing with the elements, because you look a lot better with the top down. don't push this button unless you absolutely positively have to. You know, it's like they did a better job with the language than I am right now, but they carried through that irreverence from the ad. The user's manual is like, you know, what kind? Make sure to put on sunglasses. They have like the checkpoints of like the things that you have to do in your Mini Cooper. It's like stop and get a latte, put on the sunglasses, you know, get the broccoli out of your teeth. They kind of go down this list, and they're like, turn the key, have some fun. And there's like nothing about checking your air pressure or any of the stuff in a typical car manual. It's great. You know, the iPod experience is the same thing. You swear, and people will tell you, you talk to people about the iPod, and they're like, yeah, Steve Jobs, guy's a genius. Not really. I mean, it's like Steve didn't actually design the hardware. You know that, right? He didn't actually design iTunes. You know that, right? And that little thing that you like on the cord that was – he didn't pick white either. There are like hundreds of people that made all those little tiny decisions that you all love, but the seams don't show. It all feels like it had a singular hand in its design. And so the approach that we've taken, we've been working on this thing for over 3 years now, and you know, contrast that with Xbox One. I mean, it's twice the duration. We're still not done with it. The contrast here is how do you get thousands, in this case, iPod easy, Mini easy, couple hundred people. How do you coordinate thousands of people to make something that feels like it's been designed by one? And it's just one hand. Well, what you have to do is you have to mature yourself a little bit and stop thinking like a painter, right? Get into Renaissance theory, but I won't bore you with it. Xbox One was a painting. We pretty much knew what it was going to look like. We put some paint up on the canvas. We kind of composed the scene, and then we said, oh, we want to add this, or this isn't working. Let's change this a little bit. So we changed the controller. We added Xbox Live a year later. You know, we changed some of the color stuff. We changed our advertising approach and how we were doing that. We changed some of our global stuff. We didn't really know what we wanted with Xbox. We directionally knew what we wanted, but we didn't have the singular vision. You mature your thinking beyond painting, and you go into sculpture. Sculpture? Higher risk, higher reward. Most would argue it's a more evolved art form, but I won't get into that. The thing about sculpture that's so unique is that you have to have that singular vision before you even start. You can't get away with it like painting. You can't fix your mistakes. Before you take that chisel out, before you chip away the first piece, you have to know what you're going to carve out of that, right? So it forces a level of discipline to not just ready, fire, aim, and just start going at it like you can with painting. With sculpture, you really have to sit there and you have to think. I'll use Rodin as an example now. I mean, Rodin knew what it was going to look like before he lifted the first hammer. He had to. And I don't know if he took weeks or years or months or how he actually did it, but in a lot of cases, the thinking probably overran the amount of time that was actually put into creating the work of art. That's what we've done with Xenon. We've created this singular vision that can, there's a short version, there's a long version. There's probably some in between. The long version is 242 pages. I'm giving you an abridged version right now, but the really tight version that we use with our agencies or any of our partners, just sort of the quick one-liner, is that Xenon is a living entertainment experience powered by human energy. Interview 2,000 people here at Microsoft, they'll tell you the same thing. Interview 5,000 people that we're working with in partnership around the world, they'll tell you the same thing, whether it's advertising or retailing or whatever, whatever, whatever. Short sentence says a lot. Living entertainment. It's not about interactive entertainment. Interactive entertainment, Tomb Raider was interactive entertainment. Beginning, middle, end. Push a bunch of buttons to get to the finish. That's what it was, right? I mean, it wasn't that distinct from Super Mario Brothers. Living entertainment, it's what Red versus Blue has done with Halo. Something that the creators never imagined, and the community actually taking a hand in bringing it beyond what it initially was. My Tony Hawk example, that's living entertainment. Activision never has to lift their finger again after they release that product to create that unbelievable community network effect. So living entertainment as opposed to interactive entertainment. If we achieve living entertainment, we'll capture the masses. We'll get mom and dad and sister, you know, whoever in your family relations aren't gamers now. We can get them to enjoy our medium in some way that's appropriate for them. Powered. Power is still a big component of what we do. The power that we believe in is bigger than the processor. It's the hardware, obviously, the software that unlocks it, and the service that brings that community in. And then the last bit is human energy. I think with Xbox One, we're very technology-focused. I think just in general, Microsoft has more of a reputation of being more of a technology brand and more about being technology innovation first. Human energy. The human energy is what makes this product a magical product. It's what, you know, brings the 20,000 people that will touch this before the first person buys it together in line around the singular vision, right? It's what happens when the game creators that we were talking to at GDC, the 4,000 people that have dev kits, when they take their creativity and they bring it to the platform, it's what they unleash. But most importantly, I mean, you think 20,000, you're like, wow, that's a big number to try to organize between now and the end of the year to go ship this thing. That's a tall order. But what happens is the day after we ship it, we more than double the number of humans that are bringing energy to the Xbox platform. So we have to give them that singular, you know, experience that really makes sense for them, and we have to hand the controls over to them. I mean, in a way, after we ship, it's just about making more. You know, we're doing all the hard work that we can do up front to enable the masses to take it over. And, I mean, there's just this huge colony of gamers that will descend on retail around the world, buy this thing, and start bringing their own energy to it. So we think about, you know, about all this an awful lot, as you can probably guess. And you might think I'm a little bit off in space. But if we can put the gamers at the center, we're going to spark a revolution in the game industry. And I don't think the game industry will ever look the same. And I think this is really the thrust that will finally earn us a place in the entertainment world. I mean, you can say all you want about the revenues that we create, but it's kind of an unfair thing. I want gaming to be something that's enjoyed by everybody. And to do that, we need more help. So far, we've been using 20,000 people to try to create that. Now I want to create millions. If we can get millions of people creating that experience, then there will be something in it for everybody. It's just like the internet. You know, you can look at a newsstand until you're blue in the face and say, you know, there's really nothing here that's grabbing my attention right now, or I'm stuck on these three magazines that I'll read on a monthly basis. But then the internet happened, there was something for everybody. And that was because everybody was contributing. The readers of the world became writers. I want the gamers of the world to become creators. Okay, that's my long-winded way of introducing Xbox 360, the console concept, the vision. You want to see it?
No.
Are you ready? 8 questions? I can answer questions.
Can you get it out?
This is Xbox 360.
I start at this point to feel a little bit like a chimpanzee.
Box trick is cool.
Imagine hundreds of these up on a wall together.
There's actually subliminal messaging in there that says you must buy one of me. You're getting sleepy. Your wallet is getting looser. So you guys think? You like it?
Yeah. Looks really nice.
You have to explain it all.
I just want you guys to get your oohs and ahs out of the way. On the packaging, pay no attention to the sides of the back. It's really more the just from a brand point of view that we're looking for. Okay, so here's a product tour. First thing, we talked about painting versus sculpture. Oh, it's a little bit more sculpted, isn't it, than the last one. In fact, the way that we achieved this look was I hired a sculptor. We'll talk a little bit about that in a second. First point, somebody already got their fingerprints on it, moved it this way, horizontal or vertical orientation. Second point. What's my second point? 20 gig removable hard drive. Push this button, take it off. You have an Xbox Live account. I don't. You bought a bunch of online content. I'm cheap. You bring it over to my house. Reinforce what a loser I am for not having bought all this stuff, but we get to enjoy it together anyway. Or you've ripped your music collection to it. I'm lazy. You can bring it over and we can listen to Frank Sinatra. Here we've got infrared port. We didn't have that built in last time. So movie playback in the box, infrared support right out of the gate. That'll mean that you can use your universe remotes or buy a new remote or whatever. But of course, you can also use your wireless gamepad to control the movie or music experience. move the memory card ports up onto the console. It turns out people didn't really care that you could have in as many controllers and as many configurations as you wanted. Allowed us to do a couple of other things in here as well. This button, you might ask, what is this button?
What's that button?
That button, it's funny you should ask. That button is the binding button. Problem with binding. You have an Xbox 360 here, you have a wall here, you have an Xbox 360 here because you're in an apartment complex and everybody's got these things. You don't want the person on this couch controlling that Xbox 360, so you need to bind them. So if you bring your controller over to my place, push the binding button, push the button here, boom, now it knows, and you do the same thing when you go back to your house. So they have to have a relationship. Power button here. We've got all sorts of random blinky going on there. We'll talk about that in a second. Two USB ports that we hide behind closed doors. Unless you absolutely positively feel the need to need them, that's where you put your media. 9-volt batteries included with purchase of 3 games at retail. on the back here, USB and Ethernet, digital AV out, and here's where your power cord is going to go. Also here, you'll see a little space here where you get to plug in your 802.11 network adapter, AVT network adapter. I'll show you one of those in a second. Next, the controller. Controller is wireless, it's smaller, it's lighter, and it feels better. What more could you ask for, you may ask? Well, it's wireless, which is one thing you could ask for. Bummer about wireless is batteries die. How are we solving that problem? Same way you solve the problem in your car. You can either go buy extra batteries and have a bunch of them recharged so you can get ready and snap them in when your battery goes low. Or you can have a cable. So you can plug in a cable here, plug in a cable here, trickle charge, keep playing. Just own one battery. Same thing I do in my car. Input should be invisible. I told them not to mess with things that people understand. Here's the world's most powerful PC. Oh, by the way, it comes with a Dvorak keyboard. Congratulations, it'll make you much more productive with Office 12. Huh? I can't type on a Dvorak keyboard. You just screwed up the one thing that was the most meaningful to me. So we didn't want to screw up the home keys, if you will, the controller. Kept the 4-pack here, still analog here, still digital here. One thing that really didn't stick with people was black and white. So we moved black and white up here onto the shoulders. Two reasons for that. One, people had a hard time down here, got them away from the action keys. Two, for driving games, shift up, shift down, shooting games, reload, change weapon, really works very well with the natural affinity to controls. Over here, people weren't thrilled with the Xbox Live headset. We heard the feedback, and a lot of people like to use their own, so, and they hated the puck. So we took the puck out, put the puck in, it's inside this thing now. So now you can just take any old cell phone headset, snap it in, away you go. Think about the technical challenge. Now there are 4 of us sitting on the couch, 4 wireless controllers, all with headsets. Wow, that's a lot of stuff going back and forth, but it works. So you'll be able to do 4 player voice chat, bidirectional. Each of us can hear different things. I always hear different things than most people. What other cool stuff? The button. You might ask, what does the button do? And why is it called the button? Well, because marketing hasn't come up with a better name for it yet. But it is the button. The button is going to allow us to jump out of any entertainment experience you could humanly imagine or inhumanly imagine that's happening on Xbox 360. You push the button and you hop out of Halo, Lord of the Rings, or the Chemical Brothers, whatever you're doing on your console. Up comes the user interface, and you can go say, do not disturb. You can set your do not disturb bit. Or you can send an invite to Paul and say, Halo in 15 minutes. Or whatever you want to do. Push the button again. Ka-doop. Go right back in your gameplay experience, movie experience, music experience. Overall, it's just cool. That's binding button number 2.
Okay.
You're good with the binding button question.
I am.
So what about the light, Jay?
Funny you should
ask. So a couple things on the ring of light. I've said do not disturb a couple of times. That's because I hate stuff popping up in my face when I'm trying to enjoy a movie or watching a game. What did I say? Did I say playing a movie or watching a game?
Yeah, you did.
Reverse that. Say Paul is going to invite me to play Halo, and I know that. He says, you know, it's 7:30, something like that. I'm watching The Matrix. Why, I'm not really sure. But I don't want to be disturbed because I hate stuff popping up on the screen. Mind you, gamer invites will show up while you're watching a movie or listening to music on the screen, unless you say don't. So
this user interface I'm talking about happens all the time. It's living. So I say, do not disturb. Well, I'm expecting his call or his invite. So this thing will glow when it comes in. It'll glow orange when it comes in. It says, hey, dummy, you got a message waiting. So, you know, during one of the down scenes or if I pause the movie or whatever else, I can just kind of glance over my Xbox 360, and I know that Paul has sent me a message, even though it hasn't disrupted things on the screen. So other cool things about the light. Okay, there are four of us with wireless controllers. What player are you?
Two.
How do you know?
Because I'm on your right.
Unfortunately, with all the computing power in the world, all the software and all the services in the world, we do not know that you're sitting to my right. However, you are going to get a clue. That is going to light up, and
yep.
It's going to say you are
that
player number two. Next question. What quadrant are you in our multiplayer game?
I'm thinking top right.
Top right. Very good. Why did you say that? Because it's top right here. Now, you get an invite. Four-player split screen. This is an advanced question.
Mm-hmm.
Are you ready?
No.
Four-player split screen.
Yeah.
We're all playing. Paul sends you an invite. We've said do not disturb.
Uh-huh.
What corner is going to glow next to the power button to let you know that you have an invite? Player two.
Top right.
Final question. Final question. Final Jeopardy. 64,000. Timmy Orange.
Uh-huh.
Now, if I turn the console this way.
It's still going to be top right.
It's still going to be top right.
So, we don't know who you are, but we know which way this guy is seated. And the reason we need to know that is because we want to do the top right trick,
mm-hmm.
which you brilliantly. The other thing is we're going to have two fans in the back. So you heard the dev kits. This is like twice the power of one of those things in a much smaller form factor. We've got to move some air. So we're going to have two fans in here. I'm sensitive to acoustic disruptions, and I'm also sensitive to boxes getting too hot and having to power themselves down. So when you're in this orientation, you get less air from the bottom. So we're going to have to run the top fan a little bit higher in order to get the right airflow. We have this complex ducting system, blah, blah, blah. And then the other thing is the magic ring of light trick. So we know which way you stand. You guys like it?
Yeah.
Yeah, thanks,
fella. Give me back that battery. All right, come on, stretch your legs. I'm going to show you more stuff. And I'll tell you how we got there. Funny story about how we got there. So I said, we have to evolve. We are no longer painters, we are sculptors. And everybody looked at me and they're like, huh? I don't get it. And I'm like, well, I remember a few things from our class. How did this go? And they're like, yeah, but you're not a sculptor. I'm like, you're right. You should go get one. So I hired a sculptor. I'm not kidding. This is the funny part of the routine. I actually went out and hired a sculptor. We have a sculptor working on the team full time. That's how you get a great design, is by hiring somebody that actually knows something about it. So we hired a sculptor. We said, go design a product that's a reflection of the soul of the product that, as I gave you the 15-minute whirlwind tour on, give me the product that looks like that. It's like, all right. So he went out, and the first thing that he did is just throwing this on the board. Oh, I drew that on the board, too. First thing we did was we plotted a graph. So we said, architectural to organic, mild to wild. Those are the fundamental axes for this design exercise. You can label them anything you want, but that's where we wanted to label. And if you think about Xbox One, kind of architectural, kind of on the mild side, wasn't particularly radical. Went out, we hired 12 design companies. And we said, okay, design companies, we want different concepts in these four quadrants. And I think we have one right in the middle. But we went out, we hired, and we basically got 12 or 14 concepts, don't really remember which. And they were just directional in nature. So we put them out in front of gamers and non-gamers, and we said, what do you think? What they basically said was, Xbox One is here, and directionally we want you to go there with Xbox 360. More organic, more wild. We got it. But how did we get there? Well, we went through the 12, and it didn't necessarily mean we wanted to hire the company that bullseyed here, right? Because it was just darts at a dartboard. We didn't know where gamers were going to go. So we thought about who we liked working with and who really got it. Turned out there were three or four companies that got it. So we worked with three or four companies. We iterated a little bit. Now, part of any beauty pageant is to let all the contestants see each other. So we showed everybody one another's work. And this remarkable thing happened where this guy in Japan knocked off a design from the guys in San Francisco. And reinterpreted it and said, no, I want it to be more architectural, this, that, and the other thing, hand it back in design. And then the guys from San Francisco said, wait a minute. And then when they improved on his design. Now, if you know anything about design whatsoever, you know that designers don't work together. They work together within a studio, but they basically are working to build their portfolios, and they're working to win awards so that they can get the next big job. So in this case, we've got this sculptor in Redmond.
We've got a design firm down in San Francisco. We've got another design firm in Tokyo that are all working really well together. So I said, Jonathan, why don't we just all work together? He's like, I'll see what we can do. And in this magical twist of fate, we ended up getting a Japanese design firm, a California design firm, and a sculptor in Redmond all working together that brought this together. Now, stretch your legs. Come here, and I'll show you a little bit in these guys' portfolio. So first big challenge, there's lots of big challenges. Big challenge in design is how do you design a product in 2003 that ships in 2005 that won't really be sold to the mainstream until 2007, 2008, and make it not look old in 2010? You have to hire somebody that looks forward. So you look at this cell phone design and you say, you know, there's a lot of good ideas that got knocked off. I've seen new phones, and, like this kind of looks like the Motorola Razr and things like that. January 2002. In January 2002, this would have made us all feel a little uncomfortable. January 2002 was when the Nokia Matrix Chrome phone was science fiction at the time, right? People were like, that's the aspirational phone, not here. So, good, forward-thinking company. Also, timeless designs. Lots of the work that he does, very, very timeless. A lot of it is very Asian-influenced and also Asian market exclusive. You haven't seen a lot of these products outside of Japan. So, good kind of work with. Good future thinker. These guys we liked, and that was, you know, the original reason that we picked them as the collaboration that sold us on the final bit. Then Astro in San Francisco we hired on board. These guys rethink things. Nike said, we want to get in the watch business. People are like, Nike? Watches? No way. Oh, by the way, do we mention everything that's ever been done to a watch has already been done. You're crazy. You won't make any money out of it. Kind of feels like Microsoft getting into the console business. You guys are crazy. It's been done before. It's all played out. You don't have anything unique to bring. Astro brought something unique with Nike. Now Nike's a real player in the watch space, and we've all seen Nike watches and the fashion that they brought. So reinvention, forward thinking, great initial selection of these partners, but even greater collaboration when we actually got together. But it doesn't just stop here. So, great. We got a little bit of marketing. We got a little bit of branding in there. We've got the hardware console stuff. Feels like it hangs together. But that whole one-hand magic, you know, sculpture, blah, 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 that Jay's been talking about. You got to see the whole family. Bloody head of a gray gamer. So this is a user interface. Jeff is going to walk you through said user interface. This is where you're going to be able to push the Z button and get at any time the ability to access your media or whatever else. The reason that I bring this up on the screen is a couple fold. One, oriented or optimized for 16:9, but a design that scales to 4:3. So the aspirational HD owner will be able to upscale their experience, but we know that the far majority of Xbox 360 owners are going to start out 4:3. So we create a user interface that scales well. Second thing you'll notice is, the iconic gesture is reflected in the user interface. So we wanted to have some subtle hints of a common design language that spanned across the hardware, the software, and the services throughout. So you see the iconic gesture there. Dealing with media in the physical world, we're dealing with this tray here and this little polished indent for the eject button. Dealing with media in the virtual world or on the visual world here, you've got the tray, you've got the indent again. We designed a font from scratch, pixel for pixel, a font that could be used in our communications with our audience across everything that we do. Works great for broadcast, works great for print, works great for web, works great for on-screen, works great high def, works great standard def. Tall, tall order to ask. Took months and months and months. We finally landed on something that could be common and consistent throughout all of our experiences. Average gamer would look at this and say, doesn't look particularly big deal to me. You know, they look at the Halo font, they say, oh yeah, you've got a Halo font or whatever else. The thing with doing something that's so extremely stylized gets dated very quickly, and it's not going to work in all mediums. We actually have to adapt this in almost every medium that we use, and you'll see that the style changes quite a bit. Here, we want to get across the message that from 7 to 10, there's something going on. It's not about the style, it's about conveying the information. And the style will actually form, and the fashion of it will form based on the uniformity of our application of it. So, works pretty good. Great example of where you think, well, the hardware influences software. Actually, in this case, the software influences the hardware. So you see the blade outline here actually influences the final contours of the hard drive. So lots of subtle stuff. Average gamer's not going to look at any of this, but it's the kind of thoughtfulness that's gone in. There's 100 other examples. Kind of thoughtfulness where we're not like brashly trying to drive uniformity everywhere, but we are making sure that the scenes really hold together well, where there has to be a scene between what's on the screen and what's in the physical domain. Here's the rest of our physical goods that we'll have on day one. The DVD remote control, again, stealing the iconic gesture from the console, actually form-fitting as a result, and also has the button. So you're watching The Matrix or Lord of the Rings, and you want to set Do Not Disturb, or you want to set, you know, dial up your friend and send them an invite saying you'll be done in 15 minutes. You can't. AVXY is on there, even a Media Center remote button here. So if you have a Media Center in the house, Jeff will show you a demo of that. You'll be able to stream content from your Media Center directly to your Xbox 360. This is a $10,000 block of wood that's painted to look like a remote control, but it is the essential shape and look of the final remote. Here, the Chrome actually went over very, very well with gamers. We have a little Chrome highlight on the MUs. Once again, we have lifted from the iconic gesture. If you look very carefully, if you try it, you can try it. See that little ridge there? It's actually useful too. Like when you're pulling on it, it's not flat. It doesn't slip out of your fingers. The iconic gesture, it worked for you. Over on the back, I promised you 802.11.80G. Snaps right in like that, self-powered from the unit. You don't have all the cords hanging around, all that other stuff. It'll work horizontal or vertical, and you'll be able to move the antenna to drive up signal strength. Battery charger, if you don't like the trickle charge cable kind of concept. We will do a headset, better than the last headset. May not be people's preferences. We'll have volume on the headset and the headset instead of on the puck. And we'll have a kick-ass camera. That's not the final design on the kick-ass camera. The kick-ass camera will do 640 by 480 at 60 frames per second. So it's basically 8x the resolution of iToy. It's better than you'd ever want for video, better than your broadband is ever going to allow you to deliver real-time video. But we also thought it's not just about video, it's not just about gesture, but it's also about stills. Imagine snapping a picture of your opponents in the agony of defeat and putting it in your scrapbook. Imagine being able to personalize this experience by holding something up or taking a picture of yourself and then mapping your face into the game. Be able to do that. So we'll do high-def static shots as well. So we'll do 1280 resolution static images from the camera. So that's a family. We're going to jam all that and then some in there. I mean, we already have. We just have to make more of them. That's where it started. It's kind of funny to start at the end and then work backwards. But it started when I said we had 12 or 14 design directions. These are some of the early directions.
That one got it.
Very architectural, very wild. This was actually from Japan. That was one of the Hers designs. He had a different one, which is gone AWOL. This one either made you hungry or reminded you of the halo wall repeating texture. Depending on your point of view, that was Martin Newsom. Glass went over very, very well. Turns out that's going to be a huge trend in consumer electronics. Consumer electronics, we didn't design for the living room or the entertainment center of 2004 to 2005 or 2008. Big trend is going towards glass, going towards frosted glass, going towards lighter palettes, going away from black, going away from metallic silver. So the chill color that we ended up with is something that we think will fit with the future homes. Chrome plating. People really responded to the chrome, particularly as highlights. This was too much chroming. This was the right amount of chroming. So after you pick your direction, you pick your partners, you go build it. So here's sort of the lineage. Not every model is here. We started out with a Fisher-Price nuclear reactor. That gave us our original gesture, but it's very clear that wasn't the right direction to go. We asked them to grow it up a little bit, incorporate some of the chrome feedback that we were getting from people. Okay, off on the right start. Turns out mechanically this doesn't work. It dents, takes too much, distracts too much from the face of the design. Not simple enough. With any good industrial design process, you drive towards simplicity. And you'll see here that we just refine and refine and refine. First interpretation from Japan of the San Franciscan work. Pretty cool, huh? Totally reinterpreted the design. This here is when all three of us got together and started working, kind of clean-sheeted it. Wasn't what we wanted, but did say removable hard drive. Good innovation. We'll just put that back. this was the right gesture. Didn't like the end caps because it felt like they were, and they are, bolted on. Like the attention of the power button. All here, power button is very, very subtle, but love the attention here. More inviting says, touch me, turn it on. So they kept that, went back to the Chrome. At this point, we had pretty much made the decision that we were going to go wireless in every box. So we said, tune down the detail here. It's really about you, and it's about your media. It's about you, and it's about the games. Highlight those. At this point, we thought we'd hide the hard drive. So, you keep talking about self-expression. You talk about the remix generation, da-da-da. I'll make it wireless, great. Detune the attention of the controller ports. Better, more inviting power switch. Chrome up here, love it. They cut the face off. Said, that's great, but it violates principle number one. Our seams can't show. Okay, we'll hide the seams. Can you see the seams anymore? Well, only if I turn it sideways. Don't do that, was the response. I said, you know, I even like the color. They're like, so you like primer? We actually went and did a lot of color research, but it turned out that that a neutral palette was really good for a variety of reasons. A, it was in line with what's happening in consumer trends and consumer electronics. B, it doesn't date particularly poorly. It will mature. Might make you feel a little bit uncomfortable now. 2006, 2007, you're going to feel really great about it. 2010, we hope it doesn't feel old. But the other nice thing about the neutral palette and the impossibility of designing a product that's going to last for 10 years when you cut off the face is you can make your own faces. So, you don't like the color we gave you? Go get a different color. Go put on a different face. These are just print samples and different materials that you could use. Never mind, pay no attention to the actual design of the face. We'll probably have 5 or 6 of these at launch, but then it's just going to blow up. I mean, people are going to be hundreds of these. Musical artists, you know, there's going to be Chemical Brothers faceplate, there's going to be a Halo faceplate, there's going to be all Hello Kitty faceplate, there's going to be a fluorine faceplate, there's going to be a carbon fiber faceplate, even if there's only one. Because I want a carbon fiber faceplate. They made that to appease me and to prove that it could be done. One of the companies I didn't talk about, a company named JDK, which is out of Vermont, when we talked about what brand companies we wanted to work with and how we would make that selection, I said, it's all about authenticity. We have the challenge with the brand to preserve the authenticity that we have with the target audience and the hardcore audience that we have today. We have to preserve that, yet we have to expand to the masses. Who's done that? I think there are 2 companies in the world that have ever done that, to my liking. One is Burton Snowboards, 2 is Red Bull. They're the only 2 that have managed to preserve that authenticity while scaling massively. You could argue maybe Nike as well. But why don't we go hire those guys? Turns out, we hired those guys. We hired the guys that worked with Burton from the very beginning, from 1981, a company called JDK. And the cool thing about this is that kind of looks like a snowboard. And they've got a bunch of artists lying around and big snowboard graphics. So this is an interpretation of the guy that does camouflage work for Burton and said, well, what if we brought the fashion of camouflage to video games? It's Transformer camouflage. See the giant robots in there? It's a more traditional snowboard kind of graphic for the edgier, similar to John Carmack. A little more fashion. This is for our Japanese audience. They love wood grain, so they're going to make a wood one. Okay, they rendered a wood one. We'll actually see if they make it. A little softer. This is for after having too many drinks the night before. Which one do I turn on? Yeah, that's your game console, honey. Riff on packaging. Obviously, the marketing guys love that. You'll probably see a couple of those at E3. A little bit more urban. This one's one of my favorite, glow in the dark. They're actually looking at ways that they can illuminate it from behind by taking power off the USB port, for example. That could be pretty cool. The whole faceplate comes off. These examples are good examples, a better one. Where the doors and the power button and everything come off, so there's a lot you can do. One idea, and I don't know that we'll actually do this anytime soon, but maybe in 06, the UI can all be themed or scanned or whatever word you'd like to attach to it. So imagine one that comes with an MU built in, and the front is plugged up, so you've got the Hello Kitty faceplate. Snap it in, now you've got the Hello Kitty skin and Hello Kitty sound effects, or Ferrari or whatever, like Hello Kitty too. You can have one of those right next to my carbon fiber faceplate. So that's it. That's the design lab. That's the Xbox 360 design. Is it good?
I'm excited. first one was a bit au naturel.
That one's not going to come on.
Doesn't?
Oh, sorry. That's the fancy painted model to show you exactly what it's going to look like, not what it's going to feel like. So it's okay?
Good.
Think that you sell my hydraulic machine or
machine? The spec for the machine is going to be the console you see there with 20 megabytes or 20 gig hard drive and one wireless controller. That's the default package.
We're going to go to E3. We're going to start socializing that more with people, see what reactions are. The current thinking is you just have one configuration right now for a launch day. Then, you know, one thing that we've gotten real feedback from globally is it's great to have a global design, but forcing global packaging is really frustrating. Japan, 2007, fiber to the home, massively multiplayer four-person game becomes a big thing. Whatever. They're going to want to have that massively multiplayer whatever skin on the faceplate built in. They're going to want four wireless controllers, no need for a hard drive because you can just stream it over broadband. So that's Japan, 2007. We can do that. So we try to build flexibility into the system where flexibility makes sense. So we have wired and wireless. We have the headset, but you can also use third-party headsets. We've got the reasonably sized hard drive, but you can imagine a world where we don't have fiber to the home, and we can't stream everything, and a 200-gig hard drive is interesting. Wouldn't it be nice if you could just pick up a new hard drive in 2007 and add it to your Xbox 360? We think so. So we've got that flexibility in mind as well. You know, who knows, 2006, maybe we have one with a small hard drive, one with a big. We'll never say never. Xbox One, we kind of painted ourselves in a corner. We could only make that one generation for a lifetime. And, you know, we were talking about iPod before, and you guys were all smiling about how you feel about that product. The initial product that came out appealed to a certain audience, and then they went photos, and then they went minis, and then they went shuffle. And now they have four configurations, the same product family that works for everybody. Same service, you know, same this. One's got colors, the rest of them don't. Okay, that works. How do we have that kind of flexibility in our product line? So our vision was more of a product line vision than a single console.
Okay.
That was 3 years of energy, planning, work, inspiration.